Hey, welcome to Babu's Frickin' Podcast. It is a new year, there is new Star Wars, and you are back with your same friends on the Jedi Council for our non-toxic Star Wars podcast. I'm Mike Chiotti Ruby, joined as always by Brian Joe Yowza Lee. Brian, happy new year. Happy post-life day. What's good?
A lot going on, but it was a good life day, good new year. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to get back. Even though it's Bad Batch, we got Mando coming up. I still love Bad Batch. Mark might not, but we're going to love it anyway.
There's a whole lot of good Star Wars content coming in 2023. Mark, the Grand Moff Valentine, coming back in like evil mirror universe style. He's rocking the dark goatee, prepping for a little bit of hardcore cosplay at Disney World. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so we are T-minus 4 days and counting for our launch on the Halcyon Star Wars Star Cruiser. Greg, the Disney fanatic, and myself are going to be trying that out. And so I have grown out what many call my Lin-Manuel Miranda beard. And we're ready to blast off into the Star Wars universe, cosplaying for 48 hours on the Halcyon. And I can't wait. That's all I can think about right now. So if we're on the Stone Cold Creamery scale of the Halcyon, as of right now, I'm like the gotta have it. Like, give me more of it all day, every day, inject it into my vein.
So tell us about your, who is your character for this multi-day adventure?
Yes.
On the Halcyon.
So I was thinking, do I go Force sensitive? Do I go Jedi? And I'm like, no, I'm just, you know what? I'm an intergalactic dirtbag. So my character's name is going to be...
We asked about your character, not about you.
Yeah, it's going to be Mero Vale. Well, that's the thing, is art imitates life here, gentlemen. It's going to be Mero Vale, and it's obviously derivative of Mark Valentine. And he is a dirtbag street urchin from Corellia who made his living on the mean streets running jobs, and then got plucked by the First Order. And wound up finding out that maybe he's got some force sensitivity, but it's all raw, untrained, and so he doesn't even know what to do with it. And I thought that's a really cool, clean slate, because I don't know what the adventure is going to be like. Supposedly, you can either be a rebel, you can join the First Order, or you can be like a smuggler or a scoundrel. And depending on the choices you make on the ship, again, I'm going into this cold. I have no idea what's going to happen. But the choices that you make will obviously play into, you know, where you wind up on the last day of the trip. But it's pretty cool. It's exciting. And I wanted to give myself as much of a tabula rasa as I could, just have a little nice backstory so that I'll just play it as it goes. I don't know. Am I going to be good? Am I going to be bad? Am I just going to continue with my dirtbag ways? Who knows?
Well, I'm picturing a theme song.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Brian.
I was just going to say, I'm picturing Mero Vale looking exactly like the long-haired, like, before he was rich version of Edward Norton from Glass Onion.
Yes.
Like, the vest and all that kind of stuff.
That's the exact vibe that I'm going for, is...
Tom Cruise Magnolia. There we go.
Magnolia, that's what it, I can't remember what it was.
Are frogs going to fall from...
the Corellia.
Yeah, are frogs going to fall from the sky? We don't know. But I'm here for it. I can't wait. And I take off on Wednesday. I'll be in Florida Wednesday. And then the cruise officially launches on Thursday at, I think, 1 in the afternoon.
Mike, I
feel like you just need to have your like an iPod out with you in Star Wars style. You can like break out. And it's just like, I'm a Corellian dirtbag, baby. Like, you got the theme song. You can just totally rock it out.
I think all you need is like part of our next Babu's podcast. Mark can do a full trip report on the Halcyon. I'm sure you'll talk about it on
his side
as well. But
and I'm with Brian as well. I think you need like a full on Han Solo Magnolia style leather vest over your classic Nirvana grunge.
So I went with the
plaid shirt. So it's a full mixture of like, I'm classic Corellian with a grunge tip.
So I look like my cosplay looks like I'm straight out of Hoth. Like I have a Ranger vest, and I look like I'm ready to launch the first transport and then throw my one arm in the air. The first transport is away. Yay. That's the look that I actually have going on for the journey. So,
well, Godspeed. Godspeed, Rebels.
Hey, man, as long as this thing doesn't wind up like the Titanic, we're all good.
Good shout. So for everybody listening, if you're still listening and you're excited about what you hear on Babu's Frickin' Podcast, as always, like, subscribe, share. We are starting the year with momentum. We've been kind of in fits and spurts over the last several months on Babu's Frickin' Podcast. But rest assured, we are here. The Rebellion is reborn. And we are covering The Bad Batch Season 2 over the next several weeks, followed by, as Brian said, we are all eagerly awaiting the drop of Mandalorian Season 3. There is plenty to come this year as well with Ahsoka and a whole lot of other great Star Wars content. So without delay, let's get into it, guys. Bad Batch Season 2, our favorite ragtag group of misfit clones are back, and they are on the case once again, and we'll start it off in the Brian Joe Yowza Lee tradition of asking the Cold Stone sizings: do we like it? Do we love it? Do we gotta have it? Mark, give us your ice cream scoopage on the Bad Batch Season 2 thus far.
Well, sadly, gentlemen, I don't know if I like it. I definitely do not love it. And I don't know if I want any more of it. I have soured. The milk has gone bad, Charlie Murphy. I don't know if I want any more Bad Batch. I will do my best to try to be as constructive as I can, but I just don't see a place for this narrative anymore in the universe. And it was fun in the first season. I appreciated and did love the Easter egg hunt, but I don't know if I can endure another full season or more of just Easter eggs, if that's all that we're going to get. And I will, more to come, but I don't know if I, none of the above, honestly. I'm
Brian,
sorry.
We need a sound effect. The price is wrong for the Grand Moff.
Hold, please. I will be there.
Sorry, guys.
Better late than never. Brian, serve it up.
I'm in between like it and love it. I think there's a lot of stuff that I really like about it. I'm far from gotta have it status. Mark, we had many conversations because your first full time through Clone Wars was when we knew each other and you were even having to power through some of that. So I think the week to week with this type of narrative telling, I wish, especially because it's going to have overlap with Mando, I wish we were getting three episode arcs or something like that, so we could kind of piece more of the puzzle together. But I think it is Clone Wars season 8, season 9 for better or worse. I like the story that they're telling. I thought that the episode, the Solitary Clone episode 3 was a fantastic episode.
Three was good. Yeah, 3 was better, but the first two seasons the first two episodes of the season truly fell flat for me. I mean, I was expecting a lot more from them given the amazing first episode. The premiere of the show had me so hyped. And then I think there were a lot of great things that happened in season 1, but the first two episodes, like what a dud. I mean, they were just, I have no other way to say it. They were just a dud. And I'm kind of, I mean, I'll go into this, please, like, do something with Omega. She grates anymore. I can't do it.
I think they're telling us a story for a reason, and I'm willing to wait it out and see. But I mean, I can see where you're coming from, but I'm enjoying it a lot more than you are.
Yeah. Mike, how about you? Like it? Love it?
I like it. I like it. I don't dislike it, but I also, I definitely do not have to have it. There are moments that I love, but I think it's just basically it's a like. And I think that it is, you know, we always say it, if it's Star Wars, we're going to watch it and likely we're going to find something to enjoy about it because it's a passion. But I appreciate certain things that they are doing in rounding out the universe that we'll go over as we talk through things. But I don't see a grand vision. And I think it's kind of an amalgamation of challenges we've had with other series coming together. This is now the second series in a row, as Brian said a minute ago, that maybe we should be dropping these in bulk, if not a whole season, at least in arcs, because they don't hold up individually. I think it's suffering from really making us wait. Like, it's one thing if we're waiting to kind of figure out how it all comes together in a 12 episode, 1 hour long, really rich, deep storytelling show like Andor. But when we're talking about 20 minute one-offs, like,
correct. Yep.
The difference between this, because Brian, I hear what you're saying. Like, it's like the Clone Wars and you get these little one-off episodes. It's truly episodic. And to me, what was great about episode 3 is it felt like a classic Clone Wars episode.
It did.
It felt like a classic, here are the clones being valiant, figuring out their worth in the universe, taking on the droid army. What's different about Bad Batch from Clone Wars overall is that it's focused on this one group. And so they have to advance specific character arcs and narrative arcs for this group of people. Whereas Clone Wars, you could be all over the place because the only arc that you absolutely positively had to adhere to was that you were going to somehow get from episode 2 to episode 3.
Right.
And you couldn't destroy the universe. You could only enrich it.
But you got that in season 1, though, Mike, to interrupt you really quick. And I'm sorry.
They did a great job with that in season 1 about, you know, here's the end of the war and here's how we're going to start bridging. And yeah, I mean, let's might as well get into episodes 1 and 2, the spoils of war and the ruins of war. We end up rejoining the Bad Batch kind of in media res. We're like in the middle of it. And they get assigned a job by Sid, and off they go. But we don't really learn about a whole lot of what they've been doing in between, other than they've been running jobs for her. And Omega has aged. We don't know how much, but it looks like they've been out there a couple of years now. And the two episodes are just them trying to pull off the heist, but there's no real connectivity to anything. Where at least in episode 3, we started to see an evolution of Crosshair and an evolution of what's going on elsewhere. I don't know what your take on it was, guys. Like, I just felt like the first two episodes had some interesting action and a little bit of character development that we'll talk about, but it was just a weird reintroduction to these characters.
Exactly. And that is in a phrase, the exact way that I felt about the first two episodes. It was a really weird reintroduction to the crew. Somewhere along the way, and I understood the character development did take a back burner in the tail end of season 1, but we have completely stopped developing almost any of those characters, of those base characters. Very few of them are getting developed anymore. Maybe Hunter is getting some slightly, but the rest of the gang is just, They're by and large, they're just there to be there. And nothing is really happening with them. There's no growth in them. Crosshair has become the most interesting of all of the characters. And that, I think, is what made episode 3 so great, was he's the character that's now getting the most character development. But by and large, the rest of them, they're just running jobs. It's kind of filler episodes. Yeah, there's a little bit of action along the way, but there's nothing endearing about that group anymore. And I don't know what changed and when they stopped writing them, but like, I stopped caring because of those first two episodes. I just want it to stop. I'm actually hoping that we peel away from the Bad Batch. We did that a few times in season 1, but I'm hoping that happens more in season 2, where we get entire episodes without them even being in it, because dare I say, they have become, the core four have become the least interesting part of the entire show at this point.
I'm wondering what Star Wars is doing by Tales of the Jedi, half of that being focused on Count Dooku. Count Dooku's been mentioned in all 3 of the first episodes of this show. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious what they're doing there. It was cool to go back in episode 1 and episode 2 to Dooku's castle and kind of see a familiar Clone Wars scene. Setting, I guess, is the correct way to put that. I do think there's a grander scheme in the second episode where they meet the old man. I think it's Romar was his name. And Tech unlocks the hard drive, And it shows that these four clones, they're all clones. They've all been together for so long. They think about things the same way. I think as we continue to grow with the Bad Batch, and Omega is different from the rest of the group, where she at least sees things differently than they do, which is kind of the whole point. But a lot of it is them going to be kind of learning to be their own person and not just be their own person because they perform a specific role, but rather thinking things differently, whether it be like Crosshair thinks things differently, for lack of a better term, politically, than the rest of them do. For whatever reason, he cut his chip out and he still is very much good soldiers follow orders. I think as they differentiate themselves and become more individual and not just based upon what their jobs are, I think is where they actually become a little bit more interesting to me.
But we need to start to Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's most interesting to me, and Brian, I think you just alluded to it, is that the bigger arc, the more interesting arc that we're starting to see, and it isn't through them, is the evolution of the clones. So the fact that the clones have always been single-minded, followed orders, you know, like you said, good soldiers follow orders, they did their thing, and now in two episodes in a row, you've seen clone leaders start to exert their own sense of morality, and it's become a problem. So, you know, you've got the one captain in episode two who starts to think that maybe what they were doing was wrong, and so the governor caps him. And then you've got in
It was that he wouldn't change his report because he is going he to change the report, so he should. Yeah, he's not going to compromise his morals because he doesn't have the fear of dying, I guess. I mean, when you think about a conscripted army, they're at least going to do what they're told because they don't want to suffer the consequences. A clone just is going to do the right thing, and, for lack of a better term.
Well, and the flip of that is, you know, it was a nice, you know, it was a nice Mudhorn egg getting Commander Cody back for episode three. So Cody is obviously the evil bastard who tried to kill Obi-Wan Kenobi when they were together on.
I'm glad Cody has a conscience
on Utapau, and so yeah, his conscience comes through in the end where he realizes that what they've been doing is wrong, and he goes AWOL. So we've now seen two episodes in a row where the clones are starting to move out, and I think we're starting to see a little bit more of Vice Admiral Rampart's War Mantle initiative, where he's been saying, I want a conscripted army. And so they shut down manufacturing of the clones. And now I would not be surprised if it's almost as if the arc leads us to not a clone war, but a standoff where stormtroopers are now taking on clones, and they're actually going to look to wipe out the clones the way that they wiped out the Jedi.
Well, that's where we thought the season one
terrifying and tragic.
Yeah. We thought that's how Kamino was going to end, and it didn't.
Well, yeah, I mean, Dave Filoni pulls, and so does Jon Favreau. They pull these storylines from all over the place, and I really thought that the end of season one was going to end with that story arc of the stormtroopers having to then go back and eradicate the last vestiges of the clones who just don't want to follow the orders anymore. We might be heading to that eventually. Like, we might be getting that at some point with this show. But to that end, and I told Brian this, how many seasons do we wait to get that really great payoff at the end? I think, given how good Star Wars Animated can be, I don't understand, especially now, why you have throwaway episodes or episodes that just don't really do anything. And I understand that, you know, you have to have lighthearted moments, and you have to have some moments where you're not dialed into whatever, you know, the direction is. But there, you know, there are moments of a series and a show that you don't waste airtime. One of which is, I feel like the season opener should establish something, and running around the beach with crabs and. Like,
oh, I thought the animation in that was gorgeous, and it belonged.
I don't
crab people. Crab people look like crab.
Well, look, you know, space, getting a case of space crabs was not the way that I started. I thought that season two was going to start. So, I mean, I had very high expectations going into season two, and it just should not take until the third episode before I even start to say, okay, like I'll continue to watch. So
more than getting a case of space crabs, can we talk about how incredibly illogical Omega's bow is? Like, the whole point of having a laser weapon is that it automatically just fires for you. So, like, why does she need to have the motion of, like, pulling the thing back to fire?
I'm
watching her first, like, that's so cool.
And
I'm like,
awesome.
No, that's not cool. Like, because even Chewie's bowcaster, he just pulls a trigger.
Correct.
You know, Han, when he uses it, he, like, he points it in a bunch of directions, and then he's like, I like this thing. Like,
maybe that's the base model maybe that's the base model of the bowcaster. Who knows, man?
Yeah, but you'd think that we got a little bit farther. Like, the whole point of a bow is that it's a projectile weapon. It's shooting a laser.
There's a lot of stuff.
Have I gone too deep? No. Am I questioning too hard in a universe where people have laser swords?
I don't know. There's just a lot of stuff that... It seems highly unnecessary. The one thing I did really enjoy from the first two episodes was revisiting Count Dooku's castle. I like the fact that they're taking their time, albeit in the animated shows, to go back and discuss more of a character that we really didn't get a lot of from Attack of the Clones or even, you know, the third film. I mean, Christopher Lee is only in, what, 5-7 minutes of episode 3? He's not in a lot of it. So you don't really get to see all that much of him. And then, of course, he plays such a prominent role in the animated show. But even still, he has to split time with Grievous. Them going back and looking at his history, looking at his transformation and becoming a zealot, even seeing the fortune that he amassed. I love all of that. Like, give me all the Dooku backstory, please.
I've also really loved that. I thought that was one of the best parts of Tales of the Jedi was... I mean, obviously, half the series was Dooku. When we talked about that in our episode a couple weeks back, which, if you haven't listened to it, go check it out. I also love the Dooku stuff, and I think it's interesting seeing how his ambitions crushed his own people. You know, it's, you know, we're starting to see the overarching effects of, you know, how his actions ultimately ended up leading to the end of the Jedi, ended up leading to the end of the Republic, ended up on a more micro level, just his own people. You know, he in the name of trying to achieve his ideology, he stepped on everybody.
Yeah, I love
by the dark side he was.
Yeah, I love that location, and that was my favorite Easter egg from one. But The third episode is really where I think the meat and potatoes of this series is looking at the clones and their story and their narrative. Crosshairs has become my favorite character. Whenever we get now, I think a Crosshair episode, I think I'm just going to be dialed in to whatever is going on. I hope that we can redeem some of the other clones with some of the writing. Echo's not doing much. To be fair, Echo's never really done much in the show. Wrecker was pulling at the heartstrings hard in the first half of the season, and then his chip malfunctioned, and he's kind of been persona non grata. So I hope that we get back to him a little bit and making him a little bit more than just a set piece. And Hunter was being written so well in season one, and he didn't get to do much except just be the leader of the mission in the first two. There's a lot of potential with this show that we said this with Andor, right? It's the story nobody really asks for and/or wants. That's Bad Batch. No one really asks for the Bad Batch. No one really wants the Bad Batch, but they can make it something spectacular and tell a story of an era and an epic in this whole narrative that we can grow to love and care about, but they just got to do it right. They have to do it right. You can't have wasted moments on screen.
Before we move too far into episode 3, Mark, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Had they actually amassed the treasure that they were going for, do you think you'd feel completely differently? At least there'd be a point to them getting all that money. what it could potentially lead to. But the fact they left empty handed, I think actually makes you sour on it just a little bit more.
I just cannot endure another season of them running missions for Sid. And if I'm being completely honest.
What about for Wanda Sykes? Can I interest you in that?
Sid is annoying. Like, she's straight up annoying. The character
Rita Perlman, right? I mean, yeah. Her and Wanda Sykes, you took two of the most iconic voices voices you can tell who they are immediately.
Hey, Wanda, I'm very interested in your work in History of the World Part 2. Not as much with Bad Batch. Sorry. No.
Yeah, there was not a whole lot. They made a big deal about her joining the cast as Fee Genoa.
I don't think they knew there was an announcement.
Yeah, no, it was announced. She did nothing in that first episode other than it's like, yo, here's my friend. Hey, what's up, guys? And that was it. So I'm sure she'll play more of a role later, but they just really did not introduce much of anything. I'm also struggling with the fact that Omega is a bit more self-sufficient now. It's not like it's not totally that they all, you know, the trope of last season was, okay, what trouble is Omega going to get into this time? Let's go back for her. So this time it looked like she was going to be, especially when she was, you know, she was curing her own space crabs problem. And then later in the episode, she's, you know, in trouble again because she wanders off to go and try and save the treasure.
Because Echo's mad at her. I mean, that wasn't enough motivation for her to wander off for me. I think that was a little bit...
Dude, a little bit easy. When is this crew going to wise up to the fact, too, that Sid is just running them ragged? If I had a nickel for every time Sid promised them like an end of this career, guys, with one more big score, you're never going to have to run any more missions. It's like the 10th time she said that to them, and yet they're still schlepping around the galaxy running these low-level jobs for Sid. Listen, get rid of her, guys. Do your own thing. It's never going to work out. There is no big payday. Like, can we please just move along this? Because it's not even like an A-team vibe anymore.
Well, you know what it's given me a vibe for with you just doing the accent like that and how greedy she's been with this is like, I just watched a little bit of Reservoir Dogs yesterday, and I would love if suddenly this turned into Reservoir Dogs. Like, suddenly she's Joe, and the Bad Batch realizes that there's a mole among them and for the Empire, and suddenly we end up having a space Mexican standoff.
Mike, who's Mr. Pink in all this? Just, I need to know. Because he's Mr. Brown.
Oh, like, undoubtedly Tech. undoubtedly Tech's the one sitting at the table, that's you know, cool. At lunch after, you know, after Downing and Spotchkin is like, I don't tip. I don't believe in it.
Why do I got to be Mr. Pink? Yo, you got something cool like Mr. White. Hunter is definitely Mr. White.
Oh, Hunter's Mr. White.
Who's Mr. Blonde? Mr. Blonde? He's Mr. I was just going to say, Wrecker's, you know, Mr. Blonde.
Bam, bam, bam. But you went on a cool, crazy shooting spree. Like, Wrecker is Mr. Blonde. Echo is probably Mr. Orange. He gets it in the belly.
He is. Yeah, this works. And I'm having so much more fun with the Reservoir Dogs crossover. If we can do that for the remainder of this series, then I have something to watch.
I mean, the only thing I struggle with is like, I mean, Wrecker really is kind of Mr. Blonde, but like Crosshair could be Mr. Blonde as well. Crosshair's the tough one to throw into the bunch there because Mr. Brown and Mr. Blue are such throwaways.
Yeah, but Crosshair, I loved that episode with Commander Cody.
I'm just glad Cody has a conscience, man. Like, I'm glad he at least feels bad for what he did.
Yeah, he went AWOL, and that was the best part of the episode. I think you're going to get a clone reunion at some point.
Yeah, that's coming. I also...
That was my question. It's not a clone for Rex, right? I mean, that's who he's looking for.
I also just loved the action in episode 3. Like, like I said, it felt like a classic Clone Wars episode where clones are setting up an operation... They're following through on the strategy. You're getting crosscuts to the droids who all have, and we got all the different types of battle droids. We got the standard Roger Roger battle droids. We got the strategy droid that was hanging out up top that was calling all the shots. They brought in the armored shielded droid Dakars. Like, everything was there. it was cool. It was really well put together, yeah. And the action felt like it had stakes, and it was exciting.
And again, to support what I had said earlier, the best Bad Batch episode thus far this season is one in which the Bad Batch are not present.
When he shot his sniper right down the barrel of that tank, that was awesome. Like there was some really cool crosshair stuff in this. Him and Cody actually worked really well together. Cody's moving speech for her to give up the governor and then to not ultimately follow through and Crosshair again, good soldiers follow orders. Like Cody learned who Crosshair is. We're eventually going to have this is Star Wars after all. There's going to be a redemption of Crosshair at some point. And
I'm just going to add to that point, maybe continue that thought. Is there a redemption for Crosshair, or is there just a point where he realizes that he is expendable and that he's been following these orders and everything is all for naught because he's a clone and it looks like that he's on the wrong side of history? So does he get a redemption, or does he just get tossed aside?
I think those two things are going to be one and the same. When he comes to that realization is when that redemption is going to happen. Whether he goes back groveling to the rest of the team, I don't know. But I don't think he gets killed by Rampart. I think he does eventually reunite with the Bad Batch and showing his part of the team. He's never going to be like fully part of the team. I don't think they ever will take him back in, but I think he does rejoin the team at some point. So I think when he comes to that realization is when the redemption comes. I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
I think he's going to be forced to make a decision in the heat of the moment at one point where he's going to self-sacrifice himself, disobey orders to save the rest of the team. If there's one member of the original Bad Batch that I think is going to die, I think that he is the prime candidate for that.
And if he can survive 32 days on that platform on Kamino, I don't know if anything can kill him.
What did he eat?
Yeah, talk about a gigantic plot hole. Like that was my biggest thought when I realized that, you know, Omega was older, and then we get Crosshair, and they say, "Oh yeah, you survived on there." One, who went back for him? How did they find him? And to your point, like, what was he eating Kamino Space Dolphin? Like,
yeah,
was he eating like what?
Is that water
lying there?
How he made a raft full of turtles, and he tied them together with human hair from his back.
Is that water potable? I need to know. I need a back episode where we revisit. I need a flashback on that platform.
It doesn't seem like we're going to get it either. I just think they're just going to move on.
Do you think
But I would love if it was kind of like, you know, kind of like Interstellar, where when they're on that giant water planet with the heavy gravity, like,
yeah,
I could take a whole episode of
Water World.
Well, I was going to say, do you think he had a volleyball to keep him company the whole time? Name Wilson. We've got a lot of pop culture.
We've
references.
Got a lot of unanswered questions I also think we've got enough. Like we just cobbled together enough material for not one, but probably 2 to 3 feature films on the survival of Crosshair.
I'm going to write that episode and submit it to Filoni and say, for your consideration, Mr. Filoni, here is the episode that I think you're missing. Maybe you don't want. But here it is.
I will fund your 42 cents or whatever a stamp costs these days.
Listen, that's going to be it. Let's make a podcast episode of just the Echo or not the Crosshair Survival.
The radio play of Crosshair Survival.
And we could call it 32 cycles. That could be the title.
32 rotations.
And every time there's a line for Wilson the volleyball, we just leave a lot of dead air.
You know, and I
rotations : a Reservoir Dogs story.
I thought that our Life Day episode was like a fever dream. This one's shaping up pretty good as well, gentlemen.
Oh, but at the grand scheme, I thought that the action that they showed, I wished we had gotten a slow motion when he shot that laser off of the mirror flying through the air.
That was cool. I like that better than the cool shot.
But I think it's interesting that we're getting the clones having conversations in the mess hall about the conscripted army and them being replaced, and they're becoming fully aware of exactly what's going on. The amount of clones consistently going AWOL is interesting. I guess conscience is the only real way to put it. We're going to check in with Cody again, which is what gives me hope that we are going to check in outside the Bad Batch, where we could get an episode or two about Cody and Rex, what they're doing. Do they really go back for Crosshair? I feel like he's crossed a threshold with Cody that he's kind of lost all hope when he killed the governor. So I would assume we're not done with Cody. Clearly, he's probably going to go find Rex, who's going to go find the Bad Batch, who's going to do whatever they're going to do. But I think there's going to be stories to tell. What I don't get is why we're going to overlap this with Mandalorian, because imagine how little Bad Batch we're going to talk when we get to episode 10, when we have episode 1 of the Mandalorian to discuss on this podcast.
No comment. Like, so yeah, Omega
got into trouble and the guys had to go rescue her, and back to Mando.
Make sure you're recording that and we can just hit play every week and then we'll talk Mando.
Yeah.
I like it. All right. So, are we going to have some fun?
Going, but we know that it's going.
Are we going to have some fun with our favorite Star Wars lines now?
We're gonna move on. So those of you who've been
this is why I'm here.
Babu's Frickin' Podcast from our early days when we followed Bad Batch season 1 know that we would typically cover 2 episodes and then take on a secondary topic. And so today's secondary topic was inspired from when we were talking about Andor, and Luthen had his epic soliloquy, and we said, "My gosh, is that the best Star Wars dialogue ever written?" And so that has inspired us to take an examination of the writing of Star Wars, specifically the dialogue, the storytelling overall. I think we talk about all the time, but this is an opportunity for us to talk a little bit about how the dialogue is crafted, what we like, what some of our favorite lines are. And so I'm going to kick it off by just asking a broad question, because I think that there's a lot of differing opinions, even among those who fervently love Star Wars as much as we do. Is Star Wars dialogue any good?
Yeah. At times, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Star Wars isms, it's
of course, gets into everything.
Well, I was just going to say, isn't the mark of good writing that it's highly quotable? I mean,
no, that is not the mark of good writing.
My colleagues and I work quote The Room all the time, and I would not say that The Room is like,
oh, hi, Mark.
Yeah, just because we go, oh, hi, Mark, like that does not mean that it's fantastic writing.
I actually like this. If you just quote it, then therefore it's good writing. Samsonite.
All right. Well, listen, if nothing else, I've given you a really great quote that we can always revisit.
Mark's sitting in the corner going, yeah. So this is how liberty dies, huh? Thunderous applause. But let's go with like episode 4, for example. Like, your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them. There's a lot of really good stuff in the original trilogy that actually does make a ton of sense. And then you always get, I've got a bad feeling about this.
So, I mean, that's the thing that's so interesting about it is that George Lucas is typically in the crosshairs, so to speak, when it comes to writing the dialogue, including famously from Harrison Ford, who on the set of Star Wars notoriously yelled, "George, you can type this shit, but you can't say it." So the actors even thought it was all kind of babble. And if you go and if you watch, I implore you, if you haven't seen them, if you go watch the screen tests for Star Wars, like before things got even ironed out even further. And so it's like the original screen tests of Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford. It's just absolute babble. It's amazing. And so George usually gets, you know, is really put under fire for the quality of the dialogue, because the prequel dialogue is quotable, but sometimes a little bit more fumbly than what you're describing in episode 4. And I think a lot of the best pure dialogue that we get in the original trilogy, which is from Empire especially and then Jedi, is Lawrence Kasdan.
Right. Yep. There's some really, and for the most part, and it's not, you can be the idea man, but the prequel trilogy did struggle from the standpoint of there's a lot of just really odd decisions when it comes to the dialogue. But ultimately, to Mark's point, it became very quotable and memeable. And I don't like sand. It's coarse, rough, irritating. It gets everywhere. I love that line so much. So the dialogue itself, it does differentiate a Star Wars film, like, to George Lucas's credit. Like, it does sound like it does take place in a galaxy far, far away. But there isn't anything super quotable when you're looking at it just from a apply do or do not. There is no try. Like you said, that is Lawrence Kasdan. That wasn't George Lucas. But when we look at what's come recently, some of the best stuff we've gotten just in Andor, with Luthen's speech at the end of the 10th episode and the speech that Andy Serkis gives and One Way Out and the speech that Marva gives at her funeral, all those kinds of things give Star Wars some of the best dialogue we've ever gotten, even though it doesn't take place in the original Skywalker trilogy or saga.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Tony Gilroy's stuff has been great for Star Wars. I loved a lot of the Rogue One dialogue. Everything that's written for K2 in Rogue One is amazing. Like that, the comic timing that they have for K2 as well as for Chirrut. Like there's some really, really fun stuff. Even the Vader scene, so the Darth Vader and Director Krennic scene is classic Darth Vader dad jokes. Yeah, like, and it's so nicely crafted and well put and put together. You know, so I guess, you know, it sounds like we're kind of just on the, you know, are we on the fence about George? Because I agree with you about episode 4. I think the dialogue in episode 4, there's stuff that is quotable forever.
So I guess is our question, is Star Wars better off that George Lucas isn't writing it anymore? Or is our question, does George Lucas deserve the hate that he gets? I guess is that what we're discussing here?
That's a fair question. I don't think he deserves the hate. I think that there is some clunky stuff in some of the prequels that ends up taking it down a peg. But I also think, to the point, you know, that Mark just made a minute ago, I think there's some really profound lines in the prequel trilogy. I love This Is How Liberty Dies. Like, I think that that's a tremendous piece of dialogue that he's written. Rumor is that Tom Stoppard, the world-renowned playwright, did a number of punch-ups on the episode 3 script, but I also love a lot of the episode 3 dialogue with Anakin and Obi-Wan during the duel. I think there's a whole lot that's really interesting there. I love some of the playful dialogue back and forth at the beginning with Anakin and Obi-Wan when they're going to rescue the Chancellor. I think it's unfair. I think some of the ire that he takes is unfair, given that there is
great writing in the prequel trilogy. I mean, the scene in The Legend of Darth Plagueis is a really good moment. There's always punchy dialogue in A New Hope. I mean, Mike, you and I as kids, when we only had 3 movies to quote, I mean, I think that we quoted A New Hope just as much as we did Empire Strikes Back. I mean, growing up, it seemed like A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back were probably most of the block quotes that we had and the pop culture references that we had. So there's really great quotes. There's really great writing. There's really great comedic stuff. I think where maybe George Lucas, to weigh in on the discussion, maybe he doesn't get as much respect or credit because it's weird. It's nerdy stuff and it doesn't sound cool.
Exactly.
It doesn't, and it's not meant to sound cool. It's science fiction. Like, and it's not fair to put that on just Star Wars and say, you know, it's horrible writing. All science fiction, when presented in a vacuum, sounds really weird. You know, go and read a Battlestar Galactica script or, you know.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, some of the best dialogue we have in films,
yeah,
is in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And if you take those outside of those films, it makes absolutely no sense.
No sense whatsoever. I mean, you know, the writing of Star Trek, very similar. To me, Star Trek is even nerdier than the Star Wars stuff, that unless
entirely.
So unless you understand the references with which that line is being delivered, yeah, it's horrible, quote unquote, writing by, I guess you could say, mainstream standards. But Star Wars and science fiction is never meant to be mainstream. So I don't know if it's fair to judge the writing of George Lucas when you compare him with some of his other contemporaries, but like the man's a genius. Conceptually, he's a genius. And I get that he's probably been lambasted by a lot of the people that worked on those movies saying, you know, hey, George, this is really clunky. But listen, the man does not have to support that because he has millions of fans all over the world that quote these lines. And, you know, I realize it was a very awkward, but is it good writing inherently? I think yes, because millions of us fans, Star Wars fans, we quote it on the regular. And to us, those have become maxims and they've become words that we live by. We live our like little Star Wars existence based upon these maxims and these lines. And a lot of these lines have turned into the foundation of real philosophical beliefs for some people. So to that end, I think George Lucas is unfairly criticized. And I do think he's a good writer. But if you just look at that line on a page and you pluck it out of the context in the script, yeah, it's cringy.
You could say this is outrageous. It's unfair.
Congratulations, George. You have been rescued.
But we still do not grant you the rank of master.
No.
What about the droid attack on the Wookiees?
So those are iconic for their own reasons. But if we look at iconic kind of pop culture on the broad, you know, the lines that, you know, are absolutely embedded in not just popular culture, but in culture. So obviously, no, I am your father, or as it's been convoluted to Luke, I am your father, you know, is probably the single most famous line of Star Wars, if not one of the most famous lines of any film in the history of cinema, apart from, frankly, Scarlet, I don't give a damn. And then do or do not, there is no try. You know, those are part of standard lexicon that people just don't even know a world without those being part of something. And then they have to, you know, for people who are too young, they find out later. It's like, oh, you know, it's like Peter Parker in Civil War. You remember that old movie, The Empire Strikes Back? Like they then find out about what, you know, Luke, I'm your father is, you know. So what
I think I know at the top. I think I know where he's going with that one.
Yeah. You know, what else rings for you as like truly iconic, embedded in the culture? And then we'll touch on a couple of our nerdy favorites before we wrap things up.
What do you want? Top 10, top 20, top 3? How many do you want? Cause like I can do this all day. I understood that reference.
I would say pick two or three, like go for the most.
Okay.
Like what really is like deep, you know, deeply embedded in culture. I mean, we'll pick like our top four.
Oh,
or five
we got it. Okay, I don't want to do.
Well, you want to go straight to the personal? Let's go straight to the. Yeah, I mean, so I'm gonna claim Do or Do Not, There Is No Try, and Luke, I Am Your Father are undoubtedly the two greatest lines of the Star Wars canon.
Okay, well, I was gonna say this one is definitely not. It's not circulated around the world. My personal favorite. And I don't know how many times a year I say this one, but it's like, I don't care what you smell, you big hairy oaf, get in there. Most of my lines come from Harrison Ford. They come from Han Solo and their original trilogy ones. And then I like,
who's
scruffy looking? Why, you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy looking nerf herder. Who's scruffy looking? Those have always like rung true with me. Of it at the other, we just did the TK421 just a few minutes ago. We're fine. Everyone's fine. We're all fine here. How are you? I enjoy that one. I will drop that one.
Well, to be fair, that you can't credit Lucas with that one. That was Harrison going up on his line and ad-libbing.
Completely and totally ad-libbed. You know, Princess Leia's got a lot of good stuff. You know, would someone get this big walking carpet out of my way? Has always been good. You know, Tarkin's good for a line or two. One of my personal favorites is evacuate. In a moment of triumph, I think you overestimate the chances. You know, whenever I'm about to screw up something, I'll drop that one in life.
Well, go ahead, Mark.
And I was also going to say, we've also added this one rather recently, but Major Domo would say, apologies.
That's a good late addition. I was just going to say that another little known tidbit is that Carrie Fisher rewrote a lot of her dialogue. So there's some great behind the scenes stuff where that scene that you're talking about, the scruffy looking nerf herder scene, she took George's dialogue and rewrote the scenes. And she, there's a line in episode 8, but in The Last Jedi, where, you know, she worked with Rian Johnson. She's the one who came up, who wanted to really stick it to Poe. And she's the one who wrote, get your head out of your cockpit.
Well, I mean, clearly, because she is not a committee. She does things her own way.
Right. Brian, favorite tasty nuggets?
There's always a bigger fish. Everything for me just comes down to Anakin and his diva self in episode 3. You turned her against me. I am the Senate. Just all of episode 3 is just it lives to be in my head rent free constantly. Hello there, General Kenobi.
Can you do that as Ian McDermott though? The I am the Senate, please.
Am the Senate.
Thank you.
I mean, I live for memes, so episode 3 was made for me.
Yeah, it seemingly wouldn't be classic dialogue, but a hello there, General Grievous has got to fall in there.
Yes, 100%. But if we talk heartfelt speeches, again, that's why that stuff in Andor stood out, because it's pulls at the heartstrings everywhere. But if we're going to go super quotable, I use This Is the Way, I Have Spoken. Those are two things from Star Wars that have come recently. But if we're going to talk, the Force is strong in my family, my father has it, I have it, my sister has it, there's many things in which you can apply to your daily life. And that's, Mark nailed it right on the head when he said, you have to take it within context and be nerdy enough to accept it. Because if you just go out there, it's the one day a year where everybody's like, may the fourth be with you, where everybody just kind of accepts it. But then when they see like how you and I live 365, 24/7, they're like, this is some nerdy crap. But if my wife came up to me and said, I love you, and I respond with, I know, and somebody saw that conversation, they're going to think I'm an absolute tool, when in reality, that's the response that my wife expects to get when she says, I love you. So it's just kind of what dialogue ultimately means is, what does it mean to the person receiving it, and how not everything's going to translate. I do think Luthen's speech in Andor, Marva's speech in Andor, is something that does transcend the sci-fi world. I think if you hear those speeches out of context, you're at least going to get the emotion and the gravitas that it's supposed to have. But may the Force be with you isn't going to quite cross culturally. Use the Force, Luke. Like stuff like that. I need to go to Dagobah and see Yoda. You seek Yoda. Like half of Yoda's stuff doesn't make sense to other people because it's spoken backwards and we understand what it's saying.
But you use the Force actually should be the third one on the use the Force, Luke should be the third one on the.
Yeah.
We didn't have this on our outline, gentlemen.
Wait. I thought they smelled bad.
On the outside. We didn't have this on our list of things to do today, but of all of the characters, talk about cringeworthy or just whenever this character speaks, is there any one that you do say is cringeworthy? Is there any dialogue that you just say like, oh, please just stop talking?
Are we just Jar Jar Binks. This award? I was going to say, are we just going to call this award the Jar Jar Binks Award?
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff I love about it. We talked about Jar Jar before. There's stuff I love about Jar Jar, but like...
How woo.
Yeah. When he suddenly turns into a Full House character, you know, that's...
Now, Brian, cover your ears.
I know where this is going.
For me, Phantom Menace, Natalie Portman, please just stop talking. Like, it's horrible. I can't deal with her character in that movie. I just can't. I just want her to stop talking. And then
Mark, I truly, deeply love you.
Okay. Natalie, outside of Jar Jar Binks, Natalie Portman, and she is a very gifted actress. I mean, she's an Academy Award winner, for goodness sake.
So Padme. So let's call it fair. She's Padme.
Gosh, just
it's specifically Queen Amidala, because I don't think you feel that way about Padme in episode 2 and 3, right? Like she did.
That's an outstanding distinction, Brian. Yeah, it's when she's having to be
the queen, the 14-year-old queen.
Well, I don't know. She's Senator Padme when she's
There are some moments in episode 3 that are
three, she's good. You're breaking my heart. You're going a path I can't follow.
But there's a lot of moments in 3, especially early on, not great for me.
I want to raise our baby back on Naboo.
hold me like you did back on Naboo. Yeah, she runs.
A watch your second. Tongue about Natalie Portman,
Brian. I'm sorry. Yeah,
I will accept it in Phantom Menace, I suppose.
Yeah,
my apologies.
Apologies. For me, I didn't get my quotables in. You're going to be unsurprised that I use a lot of Jedi quotables. So one of my favorites, and it's not a real, I don't know that it's a widely popular one, is I always use Palpatine's only now at the end. Do you understand? It feels very relevant. And then, of course,
a surprise to be sure, but a welcome one. That's my favorite Palpatine quote.
That's a good one. We can't have an episode and overlook everyone's famous favorite crustacean. Enter trap.
Thank you for that.
Just a man trying to make my way through the galaxy. That's another one of my favorites.
Yes, that's a goodie. But I love Robot Chicken.
Did Ninum make any of your list, Mike?
You guys have made my list anytime I ever see anything from The Rise of Skywalker, though, and it's just space bleeping horses.
Yeah. Well, that's a Mark Valentine original. having not seen the movie and the
I have not seen that movie in a very long time.
And the trailer rolled. I called up Mike and I said, dude, space effing horses.
I will give a rare piece of credit before we wrap things up. One of my favorite pieces of dialogue that came together out of Rise of Skywalker was no spy. Like the flip-flop that they have between Rey and Poe is sharply written and even better performed. Like, again, missed opportunities, but good times all around.
I don't think they knew what they had in any of those three.
Look, in that movie though, there is only one quote that steals the not the scene, but the movie, and that would be, "Hey!" During the Battle of Exegol, that moment made the whole film for me. I don't have
the line that inspired a podcast that inspired a generation of Star Wars.
And our boy Babu Frick is going to be he's coming back in March. He's going to be in season 3 of The Mandalorian, and they are bringing not just Babu Frick, but they're going to be introducing characters from the sequel trilogy in this season. So they're coming to the Mandoverse. We got to stay tuned. I can't wait to talk about that on the show.
Well, we're not far off from that. Until then, again, to our listeners who have endured our strange exploration today, I agree, guys. I think this one slid into some holiday special territory, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So if you've made it this far, you're excited for more Star Wars content, please like, subscribe, share. Join us again in a couple of weeks' time when we talk about the next several episodes of The Bad Batch, as well as find out about Mark's journey aboard the Halcyon, where he is just a Corellian dirtbag baby. And there will be much to celebrate. There will be much rejoicing when the Mandalorian returns in just a short time. So, gents, anything to add before we We jump into light space here.
Mark, are you going to download a Bad Batch to watch in the airplane?
Probably. But Mike, what I want to say to you is, are you going to bark all day, little doggy? Or are you going to bite?
Sorry?
Do I need
didn't hear
eat?
You. Perhaps you want to say that again.
I'm just stuck in the middle with the two of you. That's all I'm going to say.
Dude, I'm fully convinced that we need to figure out a way to make Reservoir Batch happen.
Well, we've got a crew, we've got a heist. It can happen. Someone can lose an ear.
No. Now that I realize it, we missed the biggest piece of casting. This. Who's Marvin? Who gets their ear chopped off?
That would have to be like a clone. So that would have to
one that was killed by Rampart at the end of the second one.
There you go. It's Star Wars, so we can definitely lose some limbs. Like, everybody criticized Reservoir Dogs for lopping off a guy's ear, and yet Star Wars, like, it's not a Star Wars movie unless someone loses a hand.
Well, Crosshair pretty much got his ear blown off by that afterburner last season, so pretty much.
We were wondering what Crosshair was. Crosshair, you know, in the words of Marvin, I'm deformed! Like, that's Crosshair. I'm freaking deformed! You guys have nailed it. Crosshair is Marvin Nash.
Because he's the company guy. He's, you know.
I know you said you just watched it yesterday, Mike. Reservoir Dogs is not this fresh on my mind. I need to go back and watch it.
Oh, you need to go back and watch that.
I've seen it, but like it's been a while.
Oh, no.
That's for our listeners and for you, Brian. Like Mark and I are Tarantino addicts. And so there was a solid chunk of our teenage years of like only having a couple of Star Wars films. We only had Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction
and True Romance. Don't forget True Romance.
Well, and True Romance and From Dusk Till Dawn and Natural Born Killers. But like, let's be real. Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction.
Reservoir Dogs all day. We are men of a certain age after all. All right, man, let's wrap this up because we're going to talk. We'll just do work at Tarantino all day.
Exactly. Gents, thank you. This was a blast. Everyone who's listened, thank you so much for joining us. And until next time, may the Force be with you.
Always.